Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello and welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester with me, Clint Boone. Every week, we like to celebrate the spirit of Manchester by talking to somebody who's helped shape the city. This week, in the final episode of Series 2, I'm joined by Karina Jadav, founder and owner of Menagerie Restaurant and award-winning businesswoman. Karina talks about setting up Menagerie after the success of her previous restaurants.
So I was terrified again. I'd gone from being quite confident to being scared.
And she'll describe how it feels to be a strong woman in a male-dominated industry.
And I was working with a team of guys and they were just looking at me like, you don't have a clue what you're doing.
Gives a great pleasure to welcome to the studio a woman who's made quite a name for herself on Manchester's food and hospitality scene in recent years. She's given us some amazing restaurants, including places like Southern Eleven, Neighbourhood, Victor's, and more recently, Menagerie. Karina Jadav, welcome to Humans of Excess Manchester.
Hi, thank you for having me.
It's the first time we've met, I believe, isn't it?
It is, although I'm not sure if I've actually come across you and you just don't remember me.
I've got a feeling back in the days of journalism we might have crossed paths, but the fact that you work or your latest restaurant is like less than 200 yards from where we're sitting at the moment, so we've probably walked past each other in spinning fields often. And we're going to talk about a lot of things, including these restaurants that you built over the years. You're expecting a baby as well, aren't we?
I am. I'm due in August and right. I'm having a little boy.
A little boy?
Yes.
Due in August, so not long away. We better get a moving, aren't we?
I know, he's kicking away.
Let's start at the beginning. Karina, you were born in Blackburn, and how was your childhood?
Well, I was born in Blackburn, and I just had a really lovely childhood because you don't think of this when you think of Blackburn, but it's just a lot of countryside. So I spent my childhood, you wouldn't let your kids do it now, just running around in the fields and basically went out on a Saturday morning and came back for tea and played fairies and played with the cows and did that. So it's nice.
Sounds exactly like my childhood, playing fairies and playing with cows. I spent a lot of time doing that. What did your parents do for work?
So my dad was a doctor and my mum was a nurse. I think even now my dad turned to me yesterday and said, I wish you had a proper job. And what he means is, I wish you were a doctor or a solicitor and business is so unstable. Why are you doing this? but my business isn't unstable, but he just perceives business as not being a consistent, steady job. And he thinks like being a doctor is kind of like safe and you get maternity leave with the NHS, all of that. So kind of growing up in that environment, they were caring people, obviously they worked in caring professions. It's obviously kind of rubbed off on me a bit, which is something I have to fight against myself sometimes at work, because it's not necessarily beneficial for me to be like that in the workplace.
Especially the workplace that you're creating, because it's all about the party, isn't it? So you're probably creating a few party animals. And
yeah.
Let's talk about, how did you get on at school? Did you do well at school?
I was an absolute geek.
Was you really?
I was scared of everyone, and I was scared of not getting 10 out of 10, and just got my head down. I was quite well behaved, really, until I got to like 15, 16 and really started to notice boys. But I went to an all-girls school in Blackburn, so I didn't really have lots of distraction, did loads of drama, theatre, dancing, and I was just really, really geeky. I wasn't particular. I don't think anybody would have looked at me and thought that I was going to go into business or that I would have like the gumption to go and do that, because I was quite scared as well. But the theatre side, I guess, has stayed with me because I've used that a lot now as an adult.
Yeah,
until I started going out at about 16. And I was talking to somebody the other day, you know, we used to go out with £10 and come home with like £5 change and still have like, you know, had drinks in every bar. And I'm like, how did I do that?
Blagging.
Yeah, but I still got, I was allowed to go out as long as, oh God, I shouldn't say I was going out at 16. Obviously you're not supposed to, but I used to go out but I still got kind of straight A's at school. So I was allowed to as long as school was okay.
Yeah. Was music a big thing for you?
The funny thing is, I did dancing from being 3 to 18, and like part of our dance exams was always like the rhythm section, and I had terrible rhythm. I did ballet, modern, tap and jazz, so I worked really, really hard. But for me, music, I loved music, absolutely loved it, but I'd listen to like the same song on repeat and it would be like the cheesiest thing ever. You probably wouldn't want to hear what I was listening to, but
right, it probably was... not. I won't dwell on that then.
Don't dwell on it. You'll kick me out.
And you went to university. Did you go to university to study journalism, or was it something else?
No, I didn't know what I wanted to do, and I ended up doing a 3-year drama degree at Manchester, which was like an academic course. I did documentary, but it was really academic, and it was really interesting, but probably not right for me.
Yeah. So you still didn't know where you were going at that point?
I wasn't sure. I was a complete little lost soul. The first 4 weeks at uni, I ended up going into hospital because I'd had appendicitis, so I missed freshers week and all of that and didn't really ever settle in. So I did 3 years, but I never quite felt like I'd found my place. And you know, and I'd just do silly things to rebel, like they wanted us to do a video installation, so I was like, this is a load of rubbish, so I'm just going to film pigeons for 2 weeks and I'm going to say it's like a microcosm for society because, you know, pigeons, if you're going to make me do something stupid, I'm going to give you a stupid response. Okay. And I got, you know, like a bad mark on it, but it was a beautiful video. And I really got to know the pigeons at Piccadilly Gardens really well. And you can't feed them. That's illegal.
Even our pigeons are cool, aren't they, in Manchester? Yeah. It sounds like me at art college. I went to art college because I did bad at school, didn't have anything planned career-wise. And over the summer of 75, I think it was, I just thought, I'll go to art college. That's just a bit of a stepping stone to decide what to do next. But you could do all sorts of it and just call it art, filming pigeons included, you know what I mean? It's art.
Completely.
So.
Like trash cans that were flowing across the floor, and everyone was like, look at that, it means something. I was like, it doesn't mean anything. Am I the only person here that can see? But that's mean. I'm not being fair there. You know, people spent a lot of time thinking about those things.
And then you went to UCA,
University of Central Lancashire.
In Preston.
Yeah.
What did you focus on there?
I did, that's where I did my postgrad in broadcast journalism, and it kind of felt more comfortable to me because it was a bit more structured. And then from there, I met John Pickford at Key 103. He was like my mentor back in the day, and I just ended up going to work in the newsroom every Saturday and Sunday. So just kind of rock up at 5:30 on a Saturday, and off I'd go straight back out in the radio car and go and find where the stabbing or shooting had been and go and knock on doors.
So broadcasting, what was your first proper job then when you got out of uni?
Well, I started getting paid there actually eventually. So that was my proper radio job. And they used to let me read the news for Magic, and like I did get to read the news for... So that was great. And then I went to Granada Reports and did my first proper contract there, and I had like 3 different jobs because they just kept saying, well, we can give you a contract doing this and you can do this. So I was like cleaner, desk journalist, voiceover, all sorts of random.
When you used to be a newsreader, did you end the news report by saying your name?
Yes.
Can you do it now for us?
So we'd start with something like, you know, our top story. you know, and today is going to be really sunny and a dog from Moss Side has found a new friend and blah, blah, blah. Thank you. I'm Karina Jadhav.
That's good, that. I like that. Didn't see that. Bit of theatre there on the podcast. We're having that. What were the highlights of your broadcasting career?
Big highlight for me was going to Downing Street with some kids from Manchester who were trying to raise awareness about poverty, child like poverty. And so that was amazing because I got to learn a lot more about it and I got to go and meet children that were kind of working in sweatshops in India and talking to them, and they were absolutely amazing. But then I got to go to 10 Downing Street and interview Gordon Brown about it. So, I mean, I was really young and I don't think I had a clue.
Right.
The funny thing is, I worked as a journalist and I worked on a political programme at ITV as well, and I still wasn't great at politics. I was a bit out of my depth.
Yeah.
They shouldn't really have sent me, and they should never have let me report on sport.
And how did you take to life in Manchester then? Because you moved from Blackburn to live in the city, didn't you?
Well, I never left after uni. I stayed. When I came to Manchester from Blackburn is where I'm from and it's always going to be home, but Manchester, I felt like I fit in because it's so multicultural and like it's almost a good thing to be different. Whereas growing up, I was very much like the Indian child, and I'm mixed race. I'm not Indian, but people be like, where are you from? And I'd be like, Blackburn. They'd be like, no, where are you from though? Oh, my dad's Indian. And that's kind of, when I came to Manchester, I didn't feel that stigma the same way.
Yeah.
When I was at school, I had this thing like all the girls I went to school with were blonde and they were like Barbie dolls and like super gorgeous. And I was like, I want blonde hair. So I dyed my hair blonde when I was 16. Bearing in mind, nobody can see me, but I'm quite dark because I'm half Indian. When I came to Manchester, I started to feel like I was kind of comfortable in my own skin. And I was like, this is a good thing, like yeah. to be different and to stand out a bit and not to be like the same as all the people that I'm around all the time. So that's one of the things that with the city that I kind of never wanted to leave, and that made me feel like more at home here.
A lot of people said that about it. It's the melting pot. Colin Gibbons, one of our recent guests, described it as that real melting pot sort of vibe, you know, all the multicultural stuff that's going on in the city, and people from all over the world thriving here, which is brilliant. How did you make the transition from journalism into food then? Where did that come from?
I was working as a freelancer, and my then partner, who I later married, left his job at Lidl to set up a food court unit, but he was also doing that. That simplifies it a lot. He was doing like food and drink markets and had a trailer and just worked up from there. So I just ended up helping out. Even now when I talk about it, because it's so much, you get such like a direct action and response in terms of business when it's like a little bit smaller, that it was so satisfying to see that you could really impact the business quite easily just with like marketing it differently or going out. So for example, we did a food trailer at Event City for like the X Factor auditions, and we ran out of stock, but I was like, this is amazing. So I ran over to Costco and just bought loads of crisps and cans and got myself a shopping trolley from Asda. Sorry, Asda. And was like running down the side of the queues, like selling cans of Coke for a pound and packets of crisps. And they were like, God, that's expensive. I was like, oh yeah, I know, but it's not me that sets the prices. It's my boss. And I was like, yes, come on. Like, mate. And I just felt like such a thrill doing it. Really, really enjoyed it. And then I used to work on the till. I used to stand at the entrance to the Arndale food court and hand out samples, and just ended up working there like all the time basically and helping out. So then slowly, step by step, ended up getting involved in the business, going to the accountants, learning how to do the bookkeeping, which is basically common sense, isn't it? But you know, just figuring it out as I went along and kind of never looked back. When I got to the point where I was making like nothing, doing my freelance shifts like all over the show, driving like ages to get to places, and just being like, I don't enjoy this. Like, I'm not enjoying this as much as I enjoy going to the food court and like putting my uniform on and doing that. I ended up going and like kind of joining in with that business full time. But it wasn't my business until we opened the full service restaurant. And then he kind of said, right, do you want to do this? Do you want to properly be involved in this?
Yeah.
I was like, yeah.
And the full service restaurant, was that Southern 11?
Yeah, it was American Barbecue.
I remember it. I went there several times and it was a brilliant place.
Oh, I just miss the food so much.
It makes me feel hungry thinking about it. Did that close down? Did you sell it? What happened to it? Because it's not there now, is it?
It closed it. So I left. So in the space between Southern 11 opening, we opened a restaurant called Neighbourhood and a restaurant called Victor's. And then I left the businesses in 2015 when I got divorced. And then after I left, they closed Southern 11. But that was kind of like my baby, Southern 11, in a way that it was a learning curve as well.
Let me just backtrack a little bit there, because you started off, you did the stall, you had a food stall, didn't you? Was that part of the Manchester Food and Drink Festival?
We did the Food and Drink Festival 2 years, yeah.
Phil Jones is a character that you probably know really
well.
Phil's the guy that created the Manchester Food and Drink Festival 21 years ago, I think, innit?
Madness.
And at the beginning, I've known him since before that. He was always in the music and comedy scene, managing and putting gigs on and that. And I remember when he started doing this Manchester Food and Drink Festival, and it just shows how much the culture of the city has changed. Because back then, we were all looking at him like thinking, who's asked about a food and drink festival? What are you doing? You know, it's, music's better. But he just totally, I think people like Phil and other individuals and entrepreneurs, including yourself, have made the city what it is now, because the food and drink scene now is just as good as anywhere in the world, isn't it?
100%. More offerings, variation, new food coming into the city. Like, that's exciting to people. Then again, I'm pregnant right now, so the thought, like, anytime I see anything, I'm like, oh, food. But, you know, human beings, it's like so, it's such a basic, instinctive thing to, like, eat. It's comfort and it's happiness. And when we started doing the Food and Drink Festival, it was American barbecue, and nobody had really seen American barbecue because it was very stuck in the southern states in America, the way that they cooked it and the machinery to even do it. Like, we went to a garden centre in Tennessee and bought these. I mean, they're like $200, but you just couldn't get them in the UK. Just wood burning ovens that were like little, basically just tins where you just put your pellets in and just smoked away.
Yeah.
And just started in the garage with those.
I used to spend a lot of time in the States, and it was when the, I think it was $2 to the pound back then. And everything was cheaper in America anyway. But the stuff we used to bring back from over there, just in spread across several suitcases, you know what I mean?
Good old days.
Barbecue
$2
sets
to a pound.
And all sorts, yeah. Let's talk about the people that inspired you. But so as you're moving up through the industry, the food and hospitality industry, who are the people that you were looking at in the city or elsewhere and thinking, that's who I admire, that's who I want to be like?
I think for me, two key people like stood out in hospitality, because I'm definitely not the norm for hospitality and I don't really fit in with the scene. Like, people like Phil Jones have always been really nice and like I massively respect him. When we opened Neighbourhood, Mike Ingle, who's the MD of Allied London, so kind of Mr. Spinningfields, was hugely inspirational, and also he gave us the opportunity to do what we were doing because he did the deal with us and took us seriously. He was amazing. And for somebody that doesn't work in hospitality, he's very like-minded in terms of, and he's very like knowledgeable about hospitality. So he got the concept, because with Neighbourhood especially, it really was completely new to the UK in a way, not just Manchester, but he believed in what we were doing and kind of supported with that, which was amazing and very, very fortunate. Tim Bacon was just having his kind of comeback at the time because Alchemist had just opened and was doing really well. Oast House, he'd done with Mike Ingle. It was just one of those things, like, I always thought I was so creative, but I'd always do something and then I'd be like, realise that he'd already done it.
Right.
And I remember saying that to him. I was like, I thought I was the first person to find these light fittings. And he was like, Karina, no. Like, no.
Brilliant.
And he was really good to me when I left the businesses as well, because there was no rubbish with him. It was very straight down the line. He was like, listen, let's be honest. You can blag your way through. Best corporate aphrodisiac is confidence. So just be confident and like believe in what you're doing. And that's, it sounds silly, but especially for me, I think women are a bit worse at this. A lack of confidence was the only thing really that would have held me back, because I knew what I was doing. So to have somebody like that kind of give me a bit of a push was very valuable.
Yeah. So you're on your own back now as a business person. You're on your own. You had some, like you said, some great people supporting you there. But what inspired you to do Menagerie, and what was the philosophy or the manifesto behind it?
So I was terrified again. I'd gone from being quite confident to being scared again. With Neighbourhood and Victor's, I thought that I'd kind of found the best formula going. Vibrant dining, the revenue streams, the way it all worked together. And I was like, there's nothing better. Like, why? You can't improve upon this. So I had to figure out a way to evolve it. And obviously with hospitality, it's so competitive and things are constantly moving forward. You can't sit still. So for me, I was like, okay, well, let's go back to basics. Like, I did a drama degree. What did I really love about Neighbourhood? It was the engagement. It was the theatre. So I'm going to create a restaurant that's more theatrical, is focused on customer engagement, building relationships, stories, and aimed at women, because every restaurant we've done to date really been aimed at men, which is just something that everyone in hospitality does almost without thinking. Yeah. It's like a standard business model. So that was a major risk. And I also created spaces within the new venue. I designed spaces with the designer that weren't specifically for anything. So they weren't bar space and they weren't restaurant dining space, which is just not done, because they'd be like, well, where are the tables? It's like, no, we're going to put giant frames in a bathtub because girls are going to come and take photos here and it's going to be really fun for everybody and they'll come just for that. Like, it's just, you know, one of those things. And I was working with a team of guys and just looking at me like, you don't have a clue what you're doing. But obviously now, like, I saw a meme with the bathtub, the Menagerie bathtub in, like, a few weeks ago. I was like, oh, God.
Because the culture that they were from, those builders and decorators, whatever, that era of restauranting didn't involve any social networking whatsoever, social media. But now you've created Menagerie and it's almost like a big part of it. It's not just about the food or the drink, the temperature, it's about the look of it, because you know that everybody that goes in there is going to be on Instagram within seconds, aren't they?
It's about kind of building a relationship with people, so engaging people and them to have a story that they feel like they can go away with, like their own experience that they can talk about. And I think that's something that started with Southern Eleven, but now it like is so much more important to me. It's like that emotionally branding, whatever you do, it doesn't matter if it's a restaurant or it's an accountancy firm. Yeah. Like, you can emotionally brand it and build a relationship with your customers. And we just take it to the next level, because ultimately for me as well, like, I am female and I am 33, so I'm not far off from what my target customer is. And it's fun. So I just get to do things that I really enjoy and have a really nice time with it.
I saw it being built, because I literally, Menagerie is halfway between here and where I park my car. So I walk past it twice a day, in the afternoon and the evening. And I've seen it, I saw it being built pretty much.
Have you seen it being rebuilt?
The building around the corner now. Yeah, I've seen like, the boards on it. But even the boards look glamorous, don't they?
Well, I was like, if you're going to reclad the building, can we make it pretty? Can we make it Menagerie?
What I was going to say was, like, at the beginning when they started building it, when I realised what it was, because there was all this action, people coming and going, glamorous people coming and going. And I thought, it feels a bit barren, this part of Spinningfields at the moment, because it's on the other side of the river, the side that hasn't been developed yet. Yeah. But you've obviously got it bang on, because now the community feeling around that is a real warm sort of part of the area again, isn't it? Did you feel it was a bit isolated at the beginning?
Oh, God, it was a really difficult first year, 2 years. It's been a struggle. It's not been an easy, like, we didn't open the doors and just, like, we weren't just successful overnight, especially because the way it developed was slower. It was a different process to how I expected it. So I had to change the business model pretty quickly. We became destination and we couldn't market in the way that we thought we were going to. But now I think it is destination and people know what they're coming for and our message is, like, quite clear. But yeah, it's a really, really weird one. It's like, the beauty of it is, and the way it's worked, is like you could close the road. The bridge was closed between Spinningfields and the restaurant, and it was fenced off. You had to walk all the way around to get to us, and then we were hoarded off, and there's tunnels to the entrances, and people find us, like they go out of their way to find us because they want to. So something's going right inside.
You smashed it. Like I said, every time I walk past, whether it's afternoon, evening, whenever, it's always the atmosphere and the glamour and the colour that oozes out the door. It's just incredible, isn't it? There's always like a few limousines knocking about and a lot of celebs coming and going, isn't there, usually? Who have you met in there? Who are the biggest celebs you've had in?
Do you know what? This isn't the biggest celeb, but I just think he's actually so lovely. So basically, we had all that, was all blocked off outside the restaurant over the bridge, and there was gates to get in, but it was kind of a building site through the gates. Anyway, Tyson Fury rocks up in like a Rolls Royce, I think, or I don't know, a big, big car. And his family, and like they've got the kids and everything. Anyway, just opens the gates, drives right in, parks up. I was like, oh, yeah. HMRC security guard, like, you've got to move. I was like, good luck with that. Like, I'm not telling him to move. So anyway, he did actually move because he's really well mannered. But I was just like, yeah, you can't stop customers. If they want to get through, if they want to come down a road, they're going to.
Yeah.
Especially if they're Tyson Fury. He's not, you know, sorry.
Yeah, you're not coming in. Are you aware that your venue stands on the exact spot that was the gates for the old New Bailey prison that was built 300 years ago?
It's perfect, isn't it?
Have you seen the pictures of it as well?
I think I have seen a picture, but I've seen the ruins more recently.
I've got some here. Hang on.
Oh, go on. I love stuff like this.
Yeah, you'll like this. I've not done the ghost too, but I fancy I'm going to go at it. But basically, so where your Menagerie, this is brilliant.
It used to be a prison.
You've probably seen that picture on the web there.
Oh, yeah. See, it's such a beautiful building, isn't it?
Well, that's exactly on the spot where Menagerie is
now.
Look,
it's got a big M on the front. It's not really, but it does look like an M.
Right. And you know what I love about it as well? If you look at the street in front of it, is it Stanley Street?
Yeah.
Can you see how it kicks like a dog leg shape? And that building to the left of the picture is exactly where the tax building is today, the HMRC it talks about. So it's the same plan. It's amazing, isn't it? That's the plan.
So that was like during the Industrial Revolution, I take it, kind of vibes.
Late 1800s, that was.
So before.
They used to do public hangings outside those gates as well, Karina, I'll have you know.
Do you know what? Where I'm from, there's a lane called Gallows Lane. It's the most haunted lane in the UK because obviously there's a lot of hangings there.
Right. That's the view from this side of the river. right?
See, it's so beautiful. This, why did they not
see that diagonal bit there? That's down to where the Markadi is. The Markadi, it looks like it used to be like a landing for the boats.
Yeah.
And then they march the prisoners up here, get in there, lock them up, throw the key away.
That's what I do with my team.
Let's not talk too much about prisoners at the moment. Where
it is a zoo, though. Menagerie is supposed to be a
zoo. That's exactly what the word means, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. It's a collection of exotic animals, but ours is a collection of experiences. But people say, what do you do? And I'm like, well, I'm not really... If I said to other restaurateurs, I'm a restaurateur, they kind of look down the nose a bit. So I'm like, I'm a zookeeper.
Yeah. I think it's the hospitality word is key part of what you do, innit. It's not just the food. It's not just a restaurant. It's the whole experience and the entertainment of it. I read somewhere you think of starting another one. Is that right?
I'm really excited about this. So we're going to New York next week with the management team. So it's kind of picnic dining, I'd call it. But people won't understand what that is until they see it, I guess. The new concept that I'm working on would be a lot smaller and it's more wet-led, but it's also a lot more engaging. Menagerie has a lot of like the theatre and the performers and that element and the catwalk, but this is a smaller space that we're looking at, so it's a different way of kind of engaging with people.
Yeah,
but I'm kind of keeping it close to my chest because people copy so quickly.
I can, especially in that trade, yeah, in the food and drink trade these days. What did the rest of the team, your business partners, think when you announced you're having a baby right in the middle of all this expansion?
Well, yeah. So, to be honest, I was a bit worried about telling everyone and anyone because, well, I was worried about telling like the bank and the asset finance company and people like that. But everybody was like, oh, amazing, great. I was saying to somebody before, I think it's just because everyone knows that I'm such a control freak and that I wouldn't let anything go wrong. So I'm kind of already planning what happens when I'm on maternity.
Yeah.
And things like the Instagram and social media, I do mostly myself. So that will all be done before I go off and all of that. So it's not, the baby's going to come to work. He's basically going to have a job from birth with the pugs, with my two little dogs.
Right, what are the dogs called?
Louie and Mungo.
Right, little pugs.
Yeah, they're so cute.
Have you got a name for the baby boy yet?
No, because we're arguing over it.
Right.
Because his last name's going to be Wilkinson because his dad's from Sheffield.
Yeah.
So if it was Jadav like me, it would be a bit different.
Would you say you're quite a spiritual person, Karina?
Very, very spiritual. I think, I read my friend's angel cards for them and I'm a feather finder.
Is that like fortune telling?
Yeah, right. Not really. I kind of get a vibe about things. I think I'm very intuitive, so whatever. In my own life now, I can definitely figure things out. I get a sense about things and I kind of have a good feeling about things as to which way to go. But when I was a teenager, that's when I kind of started finding feathers and just had a few interesting experiences. And I was like, okay, this is scaring me. But as I've got older, I've embraced it more.
What advice would you give to people that look at you and think, I want to succeed like what she's done? I want to achieve what she's done. Is there any basic advice?
The biggest misconception about me or about anybody that works in industries where you see a lot on social media is that it's really glamorous, it's really easy, we just sit around and drink cocktails or mocktails, but everything comes down to hard work and it's like kind of what you put into it. And I think there are times where you may not be making the most money, or you know, you don't feel like everything's going your way, but you've got to persevere through it. That's definitely for me. Like, I've just put my blinkers on, kept going, even when people have been like, oh gosh, that's not good. Or maybe some of like the investors have been like looking at the numbers and not as happy with them. I was like, yeah, but I can see that it's going to be okay because I'm going to do this and this, and I'm just going to keep marching on with it.
Yeah.
And
you're in a very male orientated industry as well, aren't you? Or male led industry.
Yeah. I think there's definitely some builders struggling to deal with me at the moment.
Me and my wife used to do Mrs. Boone's tea parties. We started in 2006. She used to make the homemade cakes. And then every Saturday we used to do a little party in Manchester in like TV21 or Ruby Lounge. A couple of quid to get in, free tea, cakes, quid a piece, whatever. And people used to bring the kids. So we'd have like 100 adults, 50 kids every week. And then some band like Franz Ferdinand would come in and do a little acoustic set.
This is low key, isn't it?
Yeah, we did it for a couple of years, but it was before the cake thing went through the roof. It was people couldn't believe this young woman was making her own cakes in 2006. It wasn't a thing. And we did it for a couple of years. What I'm getting around to was that the amount of work it was, just that one tea party every Saturday afternoon, took me a full week of getting it together, you know, the physical side of things, you know, even just washing the vintage cups and all this kind of stuff. But what I'm saying
it's so upsetting when people break things.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even mind that. But it was back-breaking work for both of us, you know, so I can totally relate to everything you said. And ironically, it only stopped when she got pregnant with Cassius, who's now 8.
Oh, that's good.
And suddenly she couldn't stand the smell of bacon. She was having morning sickness and literally being sick in the sink.
The preparation and the planning that goes into it is so intense.
Well, you know, you said about that kick you could get from that how exhilarating it was. You could make a slight tweak to the format through the week and then you could see the results immediately.
It's so exciting.
So we tasted that on a weekly basis, like, let's do this week, let's do that. And I was DJing as well from vintage record players, two vintage record players with vinyl.
And
so just all those little things, we've created a real beautiful little thing that people tapped into and... maybe one day it'll come back. We'll see.
You should. It sounds like really Menagerie, that. Do you want to come to Menagerie?
Hey, you know what? I bet she'd love to do that. She's not keen on making... Cool. She's more into making food now rather than cakes, but I bet when she is that, she might take you up on that opportunity. Let's talk about this beautiful city of ours. We've got a...
Yeah.
We do live in... I believe we live in the finest city in the world. Do you agree?
I do, yeah. I've stayed here for 10 plus years now, so it's home to me. I'm so entrenched here that I can't even imagine having to leave, which is why opening something outside of Manchester just kind of gives me a cold feeling.
Right.
It will happen eventually, but I've put it off for a very long time.
What about the Manchester spirit? How would you describe that? We talk about it a lot on these podcasts. In fact, that's the main reason we're doing it. We're trying to get under the skin of the Manchester character. How would you define it?
I just think it's so warm. I know we're a cold city and it's raining all the time, but I obviously have an experience where I pretty much treat it like a village. So I know everyone everywhere I go. Like, I know them in the coffee shop, and when I walk the dogs, I know everybody. I like know all the different dogs. I know the names. It's just friendly. Like, you don't get that in other cities in the same way, or maybe it's bigger cities. But I do think there's like a warmth of character and it's so vibrant. Like, we've got everything and anything here.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Like, if you look at what we've got in Manchester that you don't have in like other cities outside of London, for example, but you'll have internationally, people are coming to us from the US, from Europe, from, you know, New Zealand, China, for experiences that they've sought out.
Yeah. It's a tourist city now, isn't it?
Massively. I just always find it kind of surprising when I look at my figures through social and through the website and stuff as to where people are coming from. It's fascinating. I'm like, wow, not just Menagerie, but I mean, like, the city as a whole is so international. And I think that's something really to be proud of because it's so forward thinking and creative.
Where are your other favourite places to eat in the city?
Ivuna. Ivuna's actually my favourite food in the city apart from Menagerie. Paprika chicken is so good. That's what I go for. And I tried to make it at home and I splattered paprika sauce all over the kitchen because the blender didn't work properly.
So do you do a lot of food prep at home?
I cook loads at home, yeah. But I do like Mexican and Spanish and Indian.
Were you like that as a kid? Were you into the food or not?
I didn't realise at the time, but my mum, who is from Yorkshire, from Bradford, and is English, cooked a lot of Indian food at home, but like proper Indian food. So I used to help do chapatis and like all of those kinds of things. I didn't realise what a luxury that was or like how different it was at the time, but I loved it.
Who are your favourite humans of Manchester ever, Karina? Past or present?
I'm going to keep it close to home because I think there's some amazing people in Manchester. So one person that is amazing that isn't one of my two is Sacha Lord, because not only in the hospitality world is he somebody that we all kind of like really look up to. He's now kind of got involved with Andy Burnham and he's trying to be a voice for us. And he's helped me a lot as kind of a voice for people in the hospitality industry. But my two people that are two of my favourite Mancunian people, and they were both born and brought up in Manchester, are Mark Yaffe, because I don't know if you've heard of him, but he is a litigator and a partner at a law firm, JMW.
Yeah.
But he's kind of that person that any problem I have, I pick the phone up to. Anything. It doesn't have to be legal. He fixes it and he does it with so many people that sometimes I'm like, Mark, you kind of need to worry about yourself a bit more. But he's just, from start to finish with me, he's been such a massive support and so helpful.
Yeah.
And he's not a chauvinist, so he actually does listen to what I've got to say, which I've found quite rare along the way.
Yeah.
And then the other person is one of my very good friends, Nadine Marabi, dress designer. I just massively respect her because she's absolutely grafted to get her business to where it is now. And people did not give her the credit. And, you know, it took a long time, but the business is absolutely flying and it's very, very international now. So you've got celebrities in LA wearing her designs and she's so strict, not just giving you that for free because you're famous and you're wealthy, you can afford to buy it kind of thing. So, and she taught herself how to use a sewing machine.
What would you, if you were to describe Manchester in three words, Karina, what would they be?
Definitely vibrant, creative and family.
Lovely. Good luck with your baby. Thank you for being a human of Excess Manchester. That was Karina Jadav and the final episode of Series 2. We really hope you've enjoyed this series. We've loved reading all your feedback and we'll be back soon. Don't forget to follow us on social media and subscribe to Humans Excess Manchester. Rate us and feel free to leave us a review. Thanks for listening. See you in a bit.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.